Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Oftentimes, we parents say to our growing children, "Don't be a baby. Act like an adult." Or, as they approach marriage, we encourage them to marry someone who is grown up, someone who is mature. I find no fault with this advice. But what do we mean by terms like adult or mature? Are we talking only about their physical development? Or do we have in mind their intellectual and spiritual maturity as well? What qualities identify a human being as being mature? I have already mentioned some of the qualities in previous lessons. First, maturity involves responsible independence. Second, it means loving unselfishly, not for what we can get, but for what we can give. Third, maturity means making decisions based on fact, not fantasy. Today's lesson will examine some more of the characteristics which show that a person is mature. The mature individual, according to the Scriptures, exercises self-control, self-discipline. Almost everyone would agree, it seems to me, that this is certainly a mark of maturity. But what does self-control mean? The King James Version never uses the term self-control or the word self-discipline. Instead, it talks about temperance. Let me give you some examples. Solomon argued that the man who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that rules his spirit, that heathen takes a city. Proverbs 16:32. Solomon's statements may seem to be exaggerated, but they really are not. No man can truly be successful or useful to others unless he can control himself. I shall give some examples very shortly. But let us take a look at some scriptures that use the word temperance. In Paul's great sermon to Felix, who was anything but temperate, Paul reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come. Acts 24:15. Temperance is also mentioned as one of the qualities of the fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5:23. Peter encouraged early Christians to add to their faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness. 2 Peter 1:5-6. The verb form of the word appears only two times in the New Testament, and is translated contain, 1 Corinthians 7:9, and is temperate, 1 Corinthians 9:25. The adjective form is used only one time and is translated temperate, Titus 1:8. The basic Greek word is kratos and means strength. Since the word temperance has a modern connotation of refraining from strong drink, it is appropriate to translate the Greek by the English word self-control. It is profitable to examine the opposite of temperance or self-control. Paul mentioned in his second letter to Timothy that perilous times shall come when men will be without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. 2 Timothy 3:3. The word incontinent is the exact opposite of the word temperance or self-control. The Greek word is akrates, and literally means without strength or without control. The same Greek word appears in this verse. Defraud you not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. 1 Corinthians 7:5. The New American Standard Bible translates the word lack of self-control. We know from this brief word study how important it is for Christians to control their lives. The Apostle Paul used the metaphors of a race and a boxing match to get that lesson across to the Corinthians. Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain. And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate, or uses self-control, in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But I keep my body under me, and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I had preached to others, I myself might be a castaway. 1 Corinthians 9:24-27. All of us know how vital it is for an athlete to take the proper amount of exercise, to eat the right foods, to sleep enough, and to keep himself free from disease. If he is a glutton, or drinks alcohol, or is too lazy to exercise, he will not likely compete for long. He controls his body. He does not allow his body to control him. Amateur athletes engage in strenuous training and competition to obtain a corruptible crown. Christians serve the Lord in order to receive an incorruptible crown. Are we going to allow athletes to work harder and use greater self-control in order to win a trophy than we work to receive the crown of life? We have established from the Scriptures that Christians must be in control of their lives, that is, under the lordship of Jesus Christ. But what does that really mean? In what areas must we control ourselves? Does the Bible mean that we must not eat too much, sleep too much or too little? Surely the Bible has no control over such mundane and insignificant matters. Actually, the Bible does talk somewhat about gluttony. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Proverbs 23:21. I want to say a few words about drinking in a few minutes, but let me dwell briefly on eating too much. Do you know one of the most common complaints that marriage counselors hear from husbands who have been married for several years? That complaint is often couched in words somewhat as follows. When my wife and I were first married, she was slim and trim and beautiful. 15 years later, she is too fat. Does she not care how she looks anymore? Does my opinion of her not count? Of course, women often express the same sentiments toward their husbands who have allowed themselves to become too heavy, too slovenly, too greasy. In fact, the song which Arthur Godfrey made popular about 40 years ago would be the theme song of some married people. I don't want her. You can have her. She's too fat for me. I wish this were funny, but it is too serious with many married people to be funny. So please, husbands and wives, do not let yourself get too heavy. It will shorten your life and probably your marriage. But surely too much sleep does not present any serious problems in a marriage relationship. Actually, laziness is a major barrier to marital bliss and to success in other areas of life. Please listen to Solomon. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of your sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come to you as one that travels, and your want as an armed man. Proverbs 6:6-11. If a man is so lazy that he will not earn a living for his family, he sins grievously against God and against his family. Paul insists that such a man is worse than an infidel. 1 Timothy 5:8. Many marriage problems arise when the husband is too lazy to work, or the woman is too lazy to shoulder her share of the load in the marriage. Sleep is essential to our well-being, but too much sleep indicates a flaw in character or some physical abnormality which needs attention. In either case, a marriage can suffer when the partners do not use self-control in their sleep habits. I mentioned a few minutes ago that the word temperance is generally interpreted to mean refraining from strong drink. It certainly does include shunning alcoholic beverages, but it is much broader than that. However, let me emphasize the need for all family members to avoid strong drink as you would avoid a serpent. Solomon says that wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Proverbs 20, verse 1. All of us know these statements are true, not only because the Bible teaches them, but because we observe almost daily the great number of lives that are destroyed by alcohol. 50% of all broken homes are directly related to someone's drinking beverage alcohol. 50% of all serious crimes are committed by people who are under the influence of alcohol. 50% of all highway accidents result from drinking drivers. Can any responsible man or woman think seriously about these facts and then allow himself or herself to participate in such a deadly activity? From studying the Scriptures and from examining the great destruction wrought by drinking, I honestly do not understand how anyone can drink and think he is exercising self-control. Please think seriously about the following questions. How can anyone drink when he knows the embarrassment and the shame that alcohol causes in so many families? How can anyone drink knowing that his sons and daughters are likely to follow in his footsteps? Even if you know how to hold your liquor, which is very doubtful, what if your son or daughter does not know and never learned how to hold his liquor? How would you feel if your child killed someone because their child was drinking? How would you feel if a drunk killed your child? Can we really be temperate in all things and drink at all? Please think seriously and soberly about these questions as I read another passage from the book of Proverbs. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaints? Who has needless bruises? Who has bloodshot eyes? Those who linger over wine, who go to sample bowls of mixed wine. Do not gaze at wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a snake and poisons like a viper. Your eyes shall see strange sights, and your mind imagine confusing things. You will be like one sleeping on the high seas, lying on top of the rigging. They have hit me, you will say, but I am not hurt. They beat me, but I do not feel it. When will I wake up so that I can find another drink? Proverbs 23, 29 through 35. Does the self-controlled, self-disciplined person have any dealing with an activity as destructive as drinking beverage alcohol? Another serious marital problem which has a direct relationship to self-control is anger. Men who cannot control their anger will often strike a member of the family and do serious damage. It is not that the person intended to harm his child or his wife. He simply does not control his anger. I know a case where a young husband became angry with his wife. he turned to slam the wall with his fist, but missed the wall and ran his arm through a glass door. He had to be rushed to the emergency room of the local hospital. How utterly foolish that we allow our tempers to get so out of control. Let me repeat a statement from the book of Proverbs. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. Proverbs 16:32. Probably the most serious problem of self-control relates to the tongue. Solomon recognized the enormous damage the tongue can do in any situation. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. Proverbs 18:21. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools pour out foolishness. Proverbs 15:1-2. As children, we used to say, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." As adults, we know how foolish that childish saying was. Very few of us have ever been seriously injured by sticks and stones, but we have been cut to the heart by unkind and angry words. One marriage counselor has been quoted as saying, "The thing that is most often opened by mistake in marriage is one's mouth." When James discusses the tongue in James 3, he does not specifically have in mind the misuse of the tongue in the marriage relationship. But all careful observers of the marriage scene know how the words of James apply to marriage. As I read some of these words from James, please think seriously of your marriage and how easy it is to speak hurtful words to your spouse or to your child. "For in many things we all offend. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." James 3:2. Please remember that the word "perfect" in the New Testament almost always means mature. James is simply affirming that a mature Christian has the power, with God's help, to bridle his tongue. "Even so, the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body, and sets on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell." James 3:5-6. Does James seem to exaggerate the damage the tongue can do? You know, both by reading the Bible and by observation, that James does not exaggerate. How many homes have been broken because someone talked too much or said the wrong thing to somebody? How many churches have been split because of gossiping and backbiting members? The tongue really is a fire and a world of iniquity. Furthermore, James accuses those who misuse their tongues of being children of the devil. James demonstrates how hypocritical some of us are when we claim to be devout followers of Jesus Christ and yet use our tongues to damage our fellow men. "Therewith," that is with the tongue, "bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men who are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh." James 3:9-12. May God help us to remember these words from James when we are tempted to use our tongues in an ungodly fashion. But it is not just what we say but how we say it. Paul admonished the Colossians, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man." Colossians 4:6. I have no doubt that James was speaking of a Christian's obligation to use tact and kindness in answering questions about the Christian faith. But the principle applies in every situation in life, in the home, in the church, in the community. Even when we are being badly treated by someone, we should be thoughtful and gentle in our response to others. We must remember that by our words we shall be justified, and by our words we shall be condemned. Matthew 12:37. One other aspect of self-control must be mentioned before we examine another phase of maturity. Self-control involves postponing immediate pleasures and benefits for future blessings. This is a vital part of the growing up process. We see this often in our working with high school and college students. Many of these young people could get jobs and begin to make money or to gain prestige in their occupations, but they know the value of an education. So they are willing to make sacrifices in order to gain their goals. It takes considerable maturity to make that decision. Another mark of maturity is adaptability, the capacity to change, the opposite of petrified. Judge John A. Sparbaro's book, Marriage is on Trial, calls adaptability plain, old-fashioned common sense, which your partner is able to apply to you as well as to himself. Page 14. The scriptures use somewhat different language, but the conclusion is the same. Whoso loves instruction loves knowledge, but he that hates reproof is brutish. Proverbs 12:1. Solomon says, in effect, that a wise person loves to learn, not just for the joy of learning, but that he may apply wisdom to his life and to the lives of others. Dr. Evelyn Millis Duval thinks that this love of growth, probably more than anything else, is a measure of maturity. I'm inclined to agree with her. One of the chapters in Dr. Alan Peterson's book, The Marriage Affair, was written by Peterson himself. In that chapter, Dr. Peterson makes these statements. The life of the mature person reveals a willingness to change. He is not content with mediocrity, and he believes that good enough is not enough. The key to maturity is desire. In the final analysis, we have the kind of marriage we really desire, what we are willing to work and pray for. Page 7. When we get married, there is so much that we do not know, and by the very nature of the case, cannot know. Even though you may have grown up in a Christian family, attended a congregation where marriage and the family was emphasized, and had high school and college courses on family life, there is so much that you cannot know. If we enter marriage with our minds made up about every phase of our lives, we are unlikely to grow into the kind of persons who will be good mates. We certainly should not compromise our moral convictions, but we must be willing to grow, both for our sakes and for the sake of our partners. There is a problem, however, with growth in marriage, where one partner outgrows the other. It takes a very wise person to grow and to help his partner to grow at the same time and at about the same rate. In the first lesson in this series, I emphasized responsible independence. The major thrust in that lesson was on independence. At this time, I want to say more about the need for being responsible in all phases of our lives. We do not expect small children to assume full responsibility for their behavior. However, parents must begin when the children are very small to teach them what it means to be responsible. We are often surprised and pleased at how well some children learn to be responsible in their various relationships and duties. Let me suggest several areas where we as adults must not shirk our duties and responsibilities. If we are acting as adults, we shall accept the full consequences of our sinful behavior. We will have the courage of David to say, "For I acknowledge my transgression, and my sin is ever before me." Psalm 51:3. Of course, David's attitude was the very opposite of that of Adam and Eve. Adam sought to excuse his misconduct by saying, "The woman whom thou gavest me to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat." Genesis 3:12. The inspired text seems to have Adam placing the ultimate blame on God, "The woman whom thou gavest me." When the Lord confronted Eve with her transgression, she replied, "The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat." Genesis 3:13. Adam and Eve were unwilling to say, "We have sinned. We bear full responsibility for our sins." Marriage counselors have encountered almost every excuse it is possible for human beings to invent. For example, when a man has been involved in an adulterous relationship, he will often blame his wife. It is quite common for a man to say, "But my wife was not attentive to my needs. She is not a warm and receptive wife." That, my friends, is a cop-out. Such feeble excuses sound like Flip Wilson's famous but not very funny line, "The devil made me do it." The truth is that the devil has never made anyone commit a sin. He sets the temptation before us, encourages us in every conceivable way to yield, but he does not have the power to make us transgress the law of God. Paul makes that truth very plain in the following passage. "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will, with the temptation, also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it." 1 Corinthians 10:13. Men who drink or gamble also seek to place the blame for their irresponsible behavior on their wives or on someone else. "She drove me to drink" is an excuse that men often use for their reprehensible behavior. The wives may even accept such indictments, but they are excuses and not reasons. If the devil does not have the power to drive men to drink or to gamble or to engage in illicit sexual behavior, then surely wives do not have such power. The men are just looking for a comfortable way out of their childish behavior. My friends, that kind of thinking does not deceive anyone. The Lord knows that we are merely looking for excuses, that we are failing to act like men. There are a number of other areas of responsibility that both husbands and wives must assume, such as responsibilities in the home, in the community, and in the church. The Lord willing, I plan to examine these in our study next Lord's Day, and to continue to discuss other characteristics of adults who have achieved full maturity. If you have questions or comments about our lessons, please let me hear from you. I am grateful for your response to these lessons on marriage is for adults only. Please continue to listen. Thank you, and may God bless you.